Hello, this is the Global News podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Bernadette Keogh. I'm here to introduce you to the Global Story podcast, which brings you a single story in depth with insight from the BBC's best journalists. There's a new edition every weekday. Just search for the Global Story wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. Here's my colleague, Lucy Hawkins.
Ready meals, chocolate, biscuits, sausages, fizzy drinks. We know that processed food is bad for us. But recent research shows that in many countries around the world, the majority of calories most of us consume are from products known as ultra-processed foods. These foods are being blamed for an increase in ill health, including heart attacks, strokes, obesity, type 2 diabetes, and even anxiety. So, how harmful are ultra-processed foods for our health? And given how common they are, is it even possible to avoid them? With me today is BBC health correspondent Philippa Roxby and Ruth Alexander, a presenter of the BBC programme The Food Chain. Good to have you both with us. Hi.
Thanks. Hi, Lucy.
Hello.
Ruth, can we start with some basics? What exactly are ultra-processed foods? They're known by some as UPFs, but what are they?
Good question. I'm afraid there is no set definition, but in general, it refers to food that contains ingredients that you wouldn't find in your home kitchen, food that's been industrially made and formulated to behave in a way that it wouldn't if it was at home with you. So ice cream that doesn't melt, bread that takes days to go stale. It's often packaged, it's made for convenience, and often heavily marketed. Think of packaged snacks, sweets, biscuits, pastries, cakes, pizzas, cereals, chicken nuggets, sausages, burgers, hot dogs, yogurts, instant soups. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on.
Ruth, I'm now just mentally running through a checklist of everything that's in my cupboards, in my fridge and freezer, and I'm a little bit worried about what you're about to tell us. So I know you've also been going through your cupboards. What have you found?
Yeah, that's right. And actually, I mostly cook from scratch, so I didn't think I would find much, but I found plenty. Wholemeal bread, you know, the sliced package variety that you find in supermarkets, nutritionally good for you, but ultra-processed. Fish fingers, which I think of as a sort of quick but healthy, you know, dinner time thing. And I thought, well, that can't be ultra processed. It's just fish and breadcrumbs, isn't it? It was ultra processed. Mayonnaise. I'd had a little bit with my lunch when I was going around my kitchen checking things. Ultra processed. But the one that probably surprised me most of all was stock cubes. I looked at them and they are ultra processed. So that means that all those home cooked stews I did, all that cooking from scratch I did, actually was kind of undone by the fact I put a stock cube or two in that was ultra-processed.
I mean, I think about fish fingers being the staple for so many kids up and down the country here in the UK, but in the Western world as well. Yep. So many people have them and wouldn't think that. Mm-hmm. What about, Philippa, cereal? So many kids start the day with a bowl of cereal with some whole milk. Is that okay?
Well, it can be depending on the type of cereal you choose. There's a lot of cereals that are sweetened, so lots of sugar is added to them. And actually, you've got some here. They look a little bit chocolatey. There's definitely added sugar in there. But then there's a lot of cereals that are whole grain and have fibre in them and are good for you. So this is the slight issue with the definition of ultra-processed foods, is that you tend to think that everything in your cupboard cannot be eaten. But actually, there are some that do contain the good stuff you need. And it's just sorting good ones out from the bad ones.
I mean, I think one of the things with cereal is that they're marketed as being healthy for you and a really good start to the day, particularly for kids. Mm. And this is where scientists are really concerned, aren't they? Because they say, actually, they're the driving force behind multiple diet-related illnesses can be in something as simple as your breakfast cereal.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's evidence that the majority of children's diets, particularly in the Western world, are made up of ultra-processed foods. So everything from, you know, the bread they eat to the cereals to maybe the drinks they have at breakfast. And that's a real worry because these kids are growing up. And what will this do to their health later on? I mean, there's lots of research, growing evidence that ultra-processed foods aren't particularly good for us. But scientists are still not sure exactly what it is about those foods that's causing the problem. Is it the way they're made, the way they're processed, or is it the fact that they just contain lots of sugar and lots of fat, as we can see here?
I mean, we've got a table in front of us full of ultra processed foods. And just looking at them, some you could say they're high in saturated fats, salt, sugar, but there's some pretty innocent looking bread there as well. What's wrong with that?
Well, that's right. I mean, bread comes in all different shapes and sizes. I guess you could say these might be burger rolls. I suppose they're white, so they're definitely not full of fibre, probably not whole grain. So nutritionists would say if you're going to go for a certain type of bread, go for the whole grain variety. And I guess these are processed to last longer. They look like sort of long life rolls. So you want them to stay okay in your cupboard so you can eat them for, say, several days. And that's why in the food industry, they do process things to preserve them and keep them for longer. So there are some reasons why processing is a good thing. There are other reasons why processing might not be such a good thing. And that's what scientists are trying to work out.
Yeah. And I see, Ruth, that scientists have done a big review, the largest review of some of the evidence to date. And they say there are 32 harmful health effects from some of these foods that are out there. But looking at the table of food in front of us, or even thinking about what's in our cupboards, is there any nutritional value or is there some hope there with some of these foods, Ruth?
Well, that's the thing. And as Philippa was saying, it's not known why ultra-processed food might be causing harm. And it could be that there are some foods that are ultra-processed that are absolutely fine for you. I mean, there's another category just down from ultra-processed, which is processed food, and that's not being criticised. But when I was looking in my cupboards, the dark chocolate that I would like to say is an occasional treat, actually it's probably quite a frequent treat if I'm honest, that was processed, not ultra processed. Is it good for me in the quantities I eat it? I'm not so sure. Also, potato crisps, another of my weaknesses, is another good one to look at. Because if they've got added flavour, they tend to be ultra processed. But the plain salted varieties are not considered ultra processed. Are they good for me? Well, they're full of saturated fat and have high levels of salt. Probably not, actually. So it's not clear cut.
Ruth, you and I share these guilty pleasures. I also love crisps, I have to say, as well as dark chocolate. But does this mean, Philippa, that we have to get into the habit of looking at labels? It's not something I often do, but I suppose it's time, isn't it?
It's always a good idea, because if you turn around and you look at the ingredients, you can see just how many are contained within a certain item. And a good rule of thumb is if there's more than five, and most of them are unpronounceable, you know, they're huge, long names that end with an O and perhaps even a number or the letter E. They might be additives, they might be flavourings, they might be colourings. So there's a good rule of thumb to think, well, if there's loads of these additives in this food, is it really going to be a good thing for me? And do I need it? So maybe look for something that's got fewer ingredients and less of the sort of additives in them. So that's one good way of thinking about it. Quite often on packaging, there's a sort of traffic label system, certainly in some parts of the world, that shows you how much fat is in a product, how much sugar and how much salt. And again, that's a really good way of thinking, is this going to be good for me or not?
Well, you've already mentioned those words around the world. Surely the picture is different depending on which country we're talking about. And I know in 2010, a group of Brazilian scientists said we should be focusing less on the nutritional content of food and more on the form of processing it undergoes. And they created this NOVA classification, which categorizes foods based on how processed they are. And Ruth, I know you've spoken to one of the scientists who came up with that system, Professor Jean-Claude Moubarak from the University of Montreal in Canada.
It has a huge impact in changing how people think about food. The most important thing we've done is to change the mind of the people from nutrients to practices. So before NOVA, people were talking about fiber, about sugar, about salt. With NOVA, we talk about why we process food and why we use such additive versus natural substances. It's a change in the way people think about food, and we're getting also an impact on policies, but it's something that's a little slower to obtain because there's a lot of resistance in the market from companies that are producing those ultra-processed food.
So Ruth, you've been speaking to these scientists at the University of Montreal. Did they give you an idea of just how common UPFs are and how difficult and tricky it is to avoid them?
They did. I actually asked for some examples of ultra-processed food. And after about a minute of different foods being listed, I realised it would have been much simpler to ask what isn't ultra-processed. The sales of this type of food are actually thought to be increasing around the world, particularly in middle-income countries where the sales are rising, and then in richer countries, they're already pretty high. I mean, you know yourself, if you go to the shops, actually, you've got the fruit and veg aisle, and then beyond that, there are just many, many shelves with lots of different packaged goods. And if you look at the ingredients on the back, it's often a long, long list of ingredients. So there is a fair amount of ultra-processed food out there. And apparently, the people who tend to be the ones eating the highest amounts tend to be younger, people who live in cities, often single people. So, you know, as we know, it's convenient to get something out of a packet.
Particularly when everyone's so busy at the moment in this fast-paced world that we live in. Philippa, how much harder is it if you've got a health or dietary issue which means that you have to have these foods? I know I have a son who has celiac, and a lot of what I go to buy seems to have a lot of UPFs in it. And it's because it doesn't necessarily have the ingredients in it to make the food stick together or to last a long time, or it has a lot of sugar in it to make it taste good.
Yeah.
But there aren't many other options.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, a lot of people do rely on processed or ultra-processed foods for their dietary needs. Celiacs, for example, have to avoid foods that have gluten in them. So if you go to that particular aisle in the supermarket, you're going to find things that are processed because they need to avoid that ingredient and replace it with something else. These products don't necessarily look like the original raw food, and so they would count as ultra-processed. And then there's things like baby formula milk. That would count as ultra-processed under this classification system, and yet it's something that's used worldwide by mums trying to feed their babies, and it comes from cow's milk, but it's had other things added to make it healthy for babies. There's also vegan foods, plant-based foods. They would also count as ultra-processed, and yet they're seen as very healthy alternatives to meat. So it's a little bit confusing. There are lots of people who can't necessarily avoid ultra-processed foods in the shops.
That sounds really tricky, Ruth, because we are seeing a bit of an explosion in people who have chosen to have a vegan diet or a plant-based diet as well. And from what we've been talking about, really hard for them to avoid UPFs. They might not even know that the food they're eating has UPFs in them.
Yes, if you're drinking oat milk, for example, if you look at the ingredients there, it'll be full of emulsifiers and texturizers and other things like that. But I must say, I spoke to Jean-Claude Mubarak about the issue of, for example, infant formula and gluten-free foods, and said, well, you know, they're ultra-processed under this NOVA classification system, but people rely on those for health reasons. And he agreed and said, actually, I view infant formula, for example, as medicine, not as food, but medicine.
When we talk about celiac disease or you know, or this case of milk formula, to me, these are miracles that saves lives, but I see this as medicine. When you cannot give breastfed milk to your kid, then you need an alternative. And what we have is milk formula, which is the next best thing we have. But to me, it's a medication.
So he wouldn't want people to be overly anxious about what ultra-processed products they're buying when they're buying them for a very good health reason. As with many things with diet, it's often about balance.
So we've looked at what UPFs are and why they can harm your health. Next, the ways you can avoid UPFs and what we don't yet know about them. This is The Global Story. We bring you one big international story in detail 5 days a week. Follow or subscribe wherever you listen. I'm speaking to Ruth Alexander and Philippa Roxby about ultra-processed foods. So the big question for both of you is, how can we avoid UPFs? It's pretty tricky, because one of the messages is that we should be cooking from scratch and cooking at home in our own kitchens with food that we know where it's come from. But this is all really time-consuming at the end of a long day.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult, as we discussed, to avoid every single ultra-processed food. It's extremely difficult. And if you're a busy working parent, it's much easier, let's face it, to reach for something that's ready-made, ready to go in the oven, ready to go in the microwave. It's quite often cheaper too. And in these constrained times when we're all thinking about how much money we've got in our pockets, that is an easier option. But I think experts would say, don't throw everything out of your cupboard, and don't go mad feeling guilty about everything you use that comes from a jar. But the message is always, have more fresh vegetables and fresh fruit in your diet, and fish and lean meat and whole grains. Just think of getting that balance in your diet.
I think a lot of people might understand that, but some of those straightforward things like fresh fruit and vegetables, grains, lean meat and fish, it is expensive. Filippo, these Brazilian scientists only came up with the term UPF back in 2010. That wasn't that long ago. So how much more is there to find out about the impact that UPFs have on our health?
There's quite a long way to go. Scientists are trying to work in the lab and look at the effects of things like additives and emulsifiers, which we find in ultra-processed foods. They're trying to look at those in the lab and find out if there might be an impact on our guts. And so far, they think there might be. But then they need to move on to doing that in big human studies of lots of different people. And at the moment, the research we have is based on great big observational studies, which means that you're really relying on somebody filling in a questionnaire about what they've eaten a couple of months ago. And so they're not particularly reliable studies. All they can do is say that we think these ultra-processed foods that these people have eaten are linked to poor health later on, maybe heart attacks and cardiovascular disease. But what these studies don't show is that ultra-processed food caused that heart attack. And so maybe in the meantime, lots of nutritionists say, just go back to thinking about how much fat, how much sugar, how many calories are in the things we're eating.
Ruth, I was in the supermarket recently, and it's the first time I've noticed this, that people have been standing in aisles with their phones out and scanning food. What kind of tech is out there to help us identify what's in the food that we're buying and what UPFs are there?
Yes, you can find these apps which will tell you this is ultra-processed and also like what the nutritional value of a food is. I used one in my kitchen. It was called Open Food Facts, and that's actually a French-based non-profit organisation set up 10 years ago. And I must say, they're sort of like, once you get going on it, I had to make a conscious decision to, okay, close the cupboards, put my phone down, just stop this. What you do is you scan the barcodes and it will come up, and you yourself can add products in. So users have taken pictures and added the ingredients in. So it's this sort of big database made up of products that people have found on the shelves or in their kitchen all around the world. But this one has a traffic light system where you're looking at, you know, green for nutritionally good, red if it's ultra processed. But as we've been saying, actually, it's not clear cut, really. And I spoke to the founder of that app, and he agreed that actually it is a confusing picture.
In a perfect world, basically, the food would be clearly labeled front of pack, so you would have clear warnings about ultra-processed food. And that's the final, eventual point of those apps. It's not basically keeping people captive to scanning products. It's basically changing the formulas of the food offer so that everyone benefits and that there's systemic change in what we buy in the supermarket, that the default choice in the supermarket becomes the right choices. We believe that if we mobilize, if we team up together, we can force the industry to actually listen to the public, listen to the government, and it changes the balance of power between the food industry and the general public.
I was on a family holiday recently, and we got the kids to do all the scanning of the food, which they thought was great fun. Any excuse to use the phone, I don't think they mind. As long as they've got the phone in their hands, they're happy. But it is quite a lot of effort to scan a product like this. And Chile has an interesting example, what their government is doing about UPFs. Ruth, tell us what they did to tackle high obesity rates.
Yes, a few years ago, they brought in a system where they have black labels on packaging, which if it's high in sugar or in fat, for example, with the idea of bringing down obesity rates. Looking into the statistics, it's not clear that it has actually had a great effect on those rates. But we did speak to people in Chile about whether they found those labels useful. While they know what to do and they know to avoid the black labels and they know to avoid ultra-processed food, actually sometimes life just gets in the way.
We really try to avoid that. But anyway, when we are in a hurry, I think we just pick the things that we know already and the things that we like. There's also all the tasty food and all the nice food that normally the kids like is like full of labels and sugar and all that things. So even you try to avoid it, it's easier to buy. And most of the people, we buy that kind of food because it's cheaper.
A lot of this food is targeted at children. So sweets and candies. I mean, ice cream is a commonly ultra-processed food.
It is worrying when you think of childhood obesity rates, which are creeping up in lots of countries in the world. If we don't, Philippa, get on top of UPFs, what's going to happen in the long term?
Yeah, I suppose it's quite depressing, really, to think that obesity rates could rise even more. As you say, countries are already struggling to try and make sure that children grow up eating the right things and are not overweight by the time they reach school or even start secondary school. And this type of food is so freely available and it's cheap and it's very Moorish. And of course, lots of people say that it slips down very easily and it means that you want more very soon afterwards. So potentially you eat more of that type of stuff. And if children grow up used to eating that way, that will continue into adulthood. But I think scientists have still got a job to do to find out more evidence about whether it's the processing that's to blame or whether it's the ingredients. And then also, I suppose we all need to think about how we can help people choose more of the right kinds of foods and less of the wrong kinds of foods. But it's a big challenge.
Yeah, education is obviously key with this, Ruth.
Yes, and probably the thing to do is to start with a small realistic step as well. If you're listening to this and thinking, you know what, I would like to reduce the amount of ultra-processed food I'm eating, perhaps it's just making one meal in the week from scratch. If you're vegan and you're relying on, you know, plant-based meat substitutes, which are often ultra-processed, think about substituting that with lentils and beans, which can bulk out the dish. I think what also we might, you know, lose if, you know, ultra-processed food continues to be as popular as it is the joy of home cooking. I mean, many of us are so busy that it is hard to fit that in. But, you know, if you can sort of find a simple recipe that, you know, works one day a week, maybe build up from there. Easier said than done, I know, though.
Ruth, it would be lovely if you were here with us, but maybe it's best that you're not, because given our weakness for crisps, I've got some on the table in front of me. It's going to take every bit of my willpower not to polish them off, but it's been lovely to have you with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. And yeah, I'm pleased to have avoided that bag of crisps.
Can we resist, Philippa?
No, definitely not.
Thanks so much, Philippa.
Thank you.
If you want to get in touch, email us at theglobalstory@bbc.com, or you can send us a message or a voice note. Our WhatsApp number is +44 330 123 9480, and you can find those details too in our show notes. Wherever you're listening in the world, this has been The Global Story. Thank you for having us in your headphones.
If you enjoyed listening to The Global Story and would like to hear more, there's a new episode every weekday. Just search for The Global Story wherever you get your BBC podcasts and be sure to click subscribe or follow. We'll have another edition of the Global News podcast later. Until then, goodbye.